The Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. We call it Just Love because we say if you just love God, you just love neighbor, and you just love yourself, our world will be more just and more compassionate. We don't got to get fancy about it. We just got to do it. And then our world will be a better place. You know, sometimes we complicate things too much. And I realize our world is pretty complicated. But, you know, every now and then, if you just kind of keep it simple and you keep it straightforward, things tend to work themselves out. But let me tell you, I want to go right to it. We have just two guests, Jenny?
Or, yes.
Okay. So,
yes.
So we have Jenny McCarthy here, we've Donny Wahlberg here, and
yes,
their husband and wife, and we're delighted. We thought we were going to get just Jenny, but we're delighted
bonus.
That the bonus that is here.
I needed to repent.
Well,
and rejoice.
Don't we all have to both repent and rejoice? And since this is Easter time, you know, one of the things I get really annoyed about with religion is that we make such a big thing about Good Friday and Jesus dying and all of that type of stuff, we forget that he rose from the dead and that
right.
he lives. And like, you know, there's good news. It's not sour, dour news. But I got to tell you, we religious people, like we priest types, we really can get religion messed up at times. We like want to do all this guilt stuff, and we should make people responsible, but not guilty.
And I love that.
Yeah.
Be accountable.
Yeah, be accountable.
And then let it go.
So, okay, so let's talk about it. It's Mother's Day coming up. And so let's talk about being a mom. Now, obviously, I've never been a mom.
I've not been a mom either.
Right.
Working on it, but
you know, it was I think it's something that every little girl, I don't want to say every, there's a lot of people that knew from a very early age they didn't want to have kids, but I was one that had 7 Cabbage Patch dolls.
Okay.
And came from a big Irish Catholic family where, you know, it was 4 to 7 children in each house. And I wanted a big family. And I gave birth to Evan, my beautiful boy, before I was 30. Because for some reason, I had a time limit in my head. Wanted to be a young mom. And I was blessed with him. But because of so many of the medical issues that my son had gone through, I didn't continue to have more children. And that was a difficult thing for me. But I figured I was blessed.
I'm an only child, but you know why my parents decided they weren't going to have any more kids? They said the world was bad enough that they put me into it. They were going to create any more kids. They figured the world had to cope with me.
That's you were all they could handle.
Yep. But let me tell you, I got to tell you a real secret. When I do job interviews, if somebody who wants a job is a mom, they get extra points in my interviewing.
Why is that?
Because they got some skills that, like time management. You got to figure out how you do the time management piece.
That's true.
Okay? And, quite frankly, you got to figure out how you do the unselfish piece.
Yeah.
And moms understand that the world is bigger than themselves. So they get, you know, they don't get the job automatically.
I can add another one to that,
okay,
too.
Okay, go ahead.
Which is motivation. We are motivated to give our child the best life possible. And for me, you know, I wanted to do such a good job in every job I had because I respected the work and I had to feed the baby. So I
right.
would, you know, that was my motivation. I wanted to be the best employee because I wanted to be the best mom and provide.
Now, Donnie, you like moms?
Yes, I love my mom, and I love Evan's mom and my son's
His
stepmom.
Mom gave birth to how many? 9 kids?
9.
Wow.
9.
She kept going.
Well,
that's that Irish Catholic, you know. It's,
but 9.
There are consequences for
9.
That every now and again.
Well, I'm 1. 9. I don't get 9. How
no.
many, Jenny, how many of you are family?
I have 3 sisters.
Oh, boy.
My dad came from 12.
But, you know, I got, Donnie, I got a theory about only children and big families. I mean, they say that we're kind of a selfish bunch because, you know, it's only about us and stuff like that. But I got another theory. My theory is that we can be less selfish.
Yeah.
Because we know
we... You didn't have to fight with eight other people for the last piece of chicken.
Because we knew it was all ours.
That's right.
So if we let you have it, we know we can take it back at any time.
That, yes, that's a theory.
That's a theory.
I'm not sure it's an accurate theory, right. But I think it's all based on the individuals. You know, it's even in a house with nine kids, we all do different things to get attention. Yeah. We all sort of, you know, try different things, and we all get the message from our parents in different ways. You know, a lot of times for us, it wasn't so much what our mother said as much as what she did that would be the guide. And if you paid attention, you could see the lessons that she was showing us. And if you didn't pay attention, you'd miss it because there were eight
other
kids
going
crazy. Or
she'd slap you on the top of the head like a mom did back
or
in the
that.
70s.
Jenny, here's the reason why, like, obviously I can never be a mom, but why I'd be a hard time being a dad too. How do you figure out what to do? There's no book, is there?
Right.
I mean, and all these books are probably not too good. How do you know when it's tough love? How do you know when it's soft love? How do you know when it's like, okay, you can have a little bit more, a little bit less? How do you figure that out?
You know, that's a really good question, and it really is your instinct, and I think the way you were raised. How was your environment? My mom grew up in a tough environment. Her mother had bipolar disorder, and so it was a volatile house, and she said, I want to make sure that my girls don't live in that kind of an environment. So I have this kind of idea of a mother that's very compassionate and very loving. So that's what I always went to. I would do anything for my child. And even if he's doing something wrong and I need to give him a lesson and a consequence and take away his iPad, it is out of love. So that's how I operated.
You know what my mom always used to say is, listen, I can yell at him, but nobody else can.
See, I like that.
That's what siblings are like, too. We can fight each other, but don't you try to fight them.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Donnie. That's one thing. I mean, you're the sibling or you're an only child, you're not, and you make it work, okay? But every now and then, I look at brothers or sisters, how they relate to each other, and they almost have to do it. It's part of the deal. With friends, you got to work a little bit because somebody can walk away from a friendship.
That's right.
If, like, it doesn't work over a period of time, but you're kind of stuck with siblings.
Yes, and in some ways, though, you actually have to work more with the siblings.
Okay.
Because the any baggage from your childhood is not as likely to come out with your friends as it is with siblings. Yeah. You know, it's not really going to surface with friends because it's less intense of a relationship. But that's the same thing that happens with couples.
Yeah.
A lot of people seem very healthy, very together. They get in an intimate relationship and suddenly all this stuff from their childhood, abandonment and all these things come out because it is your most vulnerable relationship. So you actually, it's the closest person in the world to you, but you need to work hardest on it because all your vulnerabilities come out.
I do think there was a perfect plan by God to surround the people in your family specifically on what you need to work on, you know, to bring out the worst and best and to work on that worst.
So let me ask you something. This is a sensitive question, but it's something that I kind of deal with. Some of the most incredible people I've met have been moms who wound up being single moms, and whether it was divorce, whatever, who were the most incredible moms in the whole world. And even what they've told me is it would have been easier if they had a partner who could have shared some of the responsibility.
Absolutely.
So how do we kind of not denigrate or put down moms who have to do it on their own and yet encourage people to be partners before they have kids? How do we kind of do that in a way that we don't put down and yet we what's best for the kids?
You know, that is a really complex question. Yeah. You know, I think
I only asked you because you're smart and complex.
You know, I would have to say it starts with, you know, the woman itself. It's like a lot of times very caring mothers are codependent and are wound up being attracted to sometimes a narcissist. And those relationships ultimately won't work. Yeah. And, you know, but I think coming out of that, that's where that woman realizes those issues and starts to develop self-love and not needing to be dependent.
Right.
And not in a negative way. You know, everyone is allowed love and allowed someone to share their life with and to lean on. But I feel like you have to learn that sometimes, like with anything, the hard way. That's what I had to do. I always thought I needed to have a lover in my life to have love in my life. And when I got divorced, it took that to make me realize, wait a minute, I don't need a lover to have love in my life. I am love already. So I think that that is my best answer for that, you know. And then along came, you know, surprisingly, a love of my life.
When she stopped looking, she found, you know, what she wanted. And that's a way that I operate in life in general. And I think it covers a lot of other things. It obviously covers the mom question that you just asked. But if you deal with wants instead of needs,
right,
you know, if you understand that, like, for going to church, I want to go to church. If you're not guilted into going and you don't need to go to church, you want to go, it's a much more, you know, enjoyable experience. And it's the same with anything in life. And also on the flip side of it, if you live from needs, like I need food.
Right.
I don't need a $550,000 Lamborghini in the driveway. You know,
right.
I need a family car. That's what we drive, family cars.
Right.
We don't need all that craziness. We don't need a 50,000 square foot mansion. We need simple things, and we want a lot of things, but if we don't really need them, you know, that's not really going to benefit us or our children, so we kind of avoid those.
How do you know when, like, to let a kid make a mistake so that they grow, but not too much of a mistake?
You don't even have to allow to let them. They're going to.
Okay.
You just have to, you have to decide when to pick your battles, so to speak. And the best thing you could ever do is lead by example, you know. And my son constantly, I've done such a good job in so many areas with him, and I'm still lacking in others, but where he teaches me now, you know, I mean, obviously he's one of my best teachers I've ever had, but choose your battles and allow him still to do his own critical thinking. Teach him about consequences, because, you know, that's where I think a lot of times we get in trouble later on in life. We don't think of consequences.
You know, I want to just take a moment, because one of the things I think that, you know, with Pope Francis, who's kind of like, you know, I used to not talk about him so much, but everybody else was talking about him. So I said, he's ours, so I might as well talk about him a little bit. But one of the things I think is important as we, around Mother's Day, we obviously, you know, from our Catholic perspective, we think it's great when two people get married, they have families, they live forever together. And that is a kind of an incredible, wonderful value that we put forth. But we got to communicate as a church, and Pope Francis gets it right. You know, sometimes it doesn't work out that way.
Right.
And when it doesn't work out that way, it doesn't mean that people are bad. It doesn't mean that that's not a good situation. Well, maybe it's not the bestest in the whole world. But so we got to figure out a way to support people who are trying to be families and moms and dads, even when it may not be, you know, the textbook version of it.
Exactly. And I think a lot of it goes back to self-love and supporting that. You can, you know, people say this all the time now, which is you can't love someone else until you truly love yourself.
Right.
And I've learned that. So I look at, like, my mother and my dad, they were married for 30 years, churchgoers every day. And you know, my dad was a drinker, and my mom finally said, I love myself too much to spend the rest of my life in this situation.
Right.
And it was difficult for her. She was crying, and, you know, she believed she was going to burn in hell forever. And
right.
She went to the church and said, can I, you know, get annulled? And she was denied. And to watch the pain on her face,
right,
and not get the support for her choosing self-love was really hard. So you bringing that up is a wonderful thing. How
right.
can we support when people say, enough, this is a volatile situation,
right,
I'm going to choose a loving one for myself.
Right.
That's
right.
Also, we talked a lot about in our relationship is, you know, when you say, okay, well, divorce, it's a bad thing, you know, I'm not saying that you said that, but, you know, when you're in a bad relationship, that's what you're teaching your children.
Right.
You're teaching them that bad relationship. If you don't have the tools and the resources to get out of that situation, you know, but stay in it, then you kind of got to get out of it. And what we've done, and one of the decisions we made in moving forward was, you know, this is going to be difficult for our children to adjust to, but let's show them what a loving relationship looks like. Right. And that's, I think at the end of the day, if you're going to, you know, if it's going to be a religious issue or a Catholic issue, for example, what's better?
Right.
Staying in a horrible situation, not, you know, and showing your kids what an unhealthy relationship is and passing that down to yet another generation, the dysfunction, or showing them what love really looks like so they can say, wow, okay, now I see happy dad and I see happy mom and I have bonus parents who are happy too.
Well, you know, Donnie, we have done such a bad job in communicating this because our Catholic teaching has never been that people have to stay in a bad, abusive relationship.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean that something goes a little wrong, you don't try to figure it out. But we've never taught that. But unfortunately, too many people who claim to be religious did say that.
Right. Yes.
And that's the stuff that we got to work out. Hey, I think I got to throw you out, don't I?
I do. But I want to say, I want to say one more thing in regards to that. What I've noticed with each generation as it learns from the last generation, I noticed that the younger ones, the millennials, noticed that their parents are, you know, got divorced and are waiting longer to make that choice to get married. So I think there's going to be a shift in divorces because they're going to wait a little bit. They're not going to get married at 21. They're not going to get married at 28 because they saw that they got to make sure they work out their kinks and love themselves before they commit.
But you know what I want to say, Jenny, you're absolutely right. And that's why we say here, love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. You got to do all three. And if you don't, at the end of the day, do all three and understand that you're loved by all three, it gets messed up. But it is really, really hard to love yourself if you haven't been loved.
That's right.
I've just seen so many adults who, as I say, when I hire people, a couple of things. One, you have to be potty trained well and bright. Because if you're potty trained well, you can kind of roll with it and you know you've been loved.
That's right.
And then it works. Hey, I got to throw you out because you got to catch a plane someplace.
Thank you.
Hey, Jenny, thank you. Donnie, thank you so much.
It was fun. Seeing you.
You know, you're welcome anytime.
I would love to. And you're welcome on my show, too. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
We got to get communion in here one of these days.
All right, we'll get communion here one day. Okay. Thank you so much. Donnie Warburg, Jenny McCarthy, they're heading to fly off because they're really important people. And we're just here kind of talking about a few things. And we're so glad they came to see us. So, listen, I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. And we kind of say just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. We're going to take a break now. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Our weekly conversation about the church and the world. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. Let's think about this week, Mother's Day. And we kind of just were talking with Jenny McCarthy and her husband, Donnie Wahlberg. And we talked about Jenny being a mom and Donnie's reflecting about growing up in a big family and the way that his mom kind of lovingly dealt with the kids in that family. And so we're going to talk a little bit later in our show with the Emmy Award winning actress Leslie Uggams about her life and career. And she was in Roots, and we're going to talk about a variety of things. So this is Mother's Day kind of week, and we're delighted to kind of focus on mothers because moms are so important. Tom, any news you want to share with our listeners?
There is, Monsignor. You know, well, first of all, as we had mentioned, we're kind of celebrating mothers, and this is a kind of this coming weekend is a day we celebrate mothers. And of course, May is a month we celebrate mothers and the Mother of God. And actually, the Vatican's Apostleship for Prayer released Pope Francis's universal prayer intention for May, which is respect for all women. And he basically said that in every country of the world, women may be honored and respected, and that their essential contribution to society will be highly esteemed. So I think, first of all, we want to say how the Pope is keeping that in his prayers, and he's encouraging others to keep it in their prayers. So I think that's something.
Hey, you know, here's an interesting fact. I don't know the answer to this, so Tom, I'm just asking. So let's say, like, women above 20 years old. Let's just say, for the sake of women above 20 years old, what percentage of the women above 20 years old in the world do you think are moms?
Oh, I wonder. I would say, Monsieur, if I had to venture a guess, I would say probably at least 85%. Does that make sense to you?
I don't know. Let's see if we can figure that out sometime.
Okay, we will. No, we'll come back and we'll do that. Yeah, that is an interesting. It's an interesting thought.
Yeah. That is interesting, but you know, I guess we should have thought about it before.
That's
true.
Looked it up. Yes, I would say for sure.
That's an interesting. The reason I said that is because when you talked about Pope Francis's prayer intention for May, it wasn't for mothers.
No,
it was for women.
Exactly.
And obviously, there are millions of women who are not mothers, but it's intriguing to me to kind of figure out about how, you know, what that would be. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, Monsieur, we'll definitely look at that, and we'll report on that in weeks to come.
Good, good. Okay, anything else? Any other earth-shattering news other than the Pope's praying?
Yes, there is. I would say, actually, it's funny. This past weekend, actually, in Rome, the Pope and our Vice President were among some basic dignitaries, scientists, and other kind of movers and shakers that participated in the third international, the name, Monsignor, is Regenerative Medical Conference. It was called Cellular Horizons, How Science, Technology, and Information and Communication Will Improve Society. It was held at the Vatican last weekend, and it was sponsored by two groups, the Pontifical Council for Culture and a group here in the United States called STEM for Life Foundation. And the purpose of the conference was to bring together world leaders and medical experts to highlight the extraordinary research advances that are being made with adult stem cell research and to discuss scientific advances in regenerative medicine. And Vice President Biden went because, as you may remember, his oldest son, Beau, died in 2015 of incurable cancer. And President Obama last year kind of made him, if you will, the czar of what they call the Moonshot Initiative to Eliminate Cancer. So when the vice president went, he basically said to the conference, he was kind of there to talk to them to say that the truth is today, more than at any point in human history, we have a genuine opportunity to help more people across the world than ever before. And he really encouraged, I think, the participants to be very, very mindful of their work and to give it the same urgency to cancer care that we give to other infectious diseases such as HIV or Zika.
You know, this is a good opportunity, I believe, to kind of just remind our listeners a little bit about our Catholic kind of perspective on this. I think sometimes people say, oh, well, Catholics, they're against stem cell research. And no, we're not. I mean, one of the issues is that when you do infant or fetal stem cell research, it is, according to my understanding, and I'm not an expert on this, but according to my understanding, is that it is oftentimes, if not always, but using most times using the results of fetuses, children, unborn babies who have been aborted. And so there's kind of a strong connection between using fetal and stem cell research and abortion, and that creates lots of real problems in a sense. However, that doing adult stem cell research is kind of a not at all anything that's prohibited. In fact, it's encouraged to do that. Now, and then I don't want to get into the medicines of it, but, you know, if people say that, that you know, the younger the stem cell, the more appropriate it is for research, the older it is, less. But anyway, but I think it's important that listeners know that the Catholic Church, the Catholic teaching is not against all stem cell research, and in fact is in favor of it. It's just when it gets kind of connected and it's got that connection with abortion that in those situations, that's where the church says, hey, wait a minute, we need to protect human life and there are other ways to deal with it. So just I think that's important to do that. And I'm glad the Vatican sponsored the conference to kind of raise that up in some way. Tom, we got another news item?
We do, yes. Now, last week also, it's very interesting, but the group called Aid to the Church in Need, because there was this conference going on that was going to get international attention, the vice president was going to be there. So they decided to hold an event on last Friday. And what they did was Aid to the Church in Need, which works to counteract what they say is 200 million Christians suffering persecution around the world. They actually lit the fountain, the Trevi Fountain in Rome, which is a Baroque fountain that's located not too far from the Vatican, in the colors of red to symbolize the blood of Christians that had been spilled. And they had a good number of speakers come to speak at that conference. One of them, Monsignor, was Chaldean Catholic Bishop Antoine Addo of Aleppo, Syria. And who basically came and he talked about his city and his country that has really fallen, obviously, into civil war. And he said that every day people are forced to leave everything they own and flee. There's a risk that in his country will be emptied of all Christian churches. They also were broadcasting information for people to see about other areas where Christians have come under attack. For example, they had the photographs of the four missionary nuns from the from Mother Teresa's Missionaries of Charity that were killed in Yemen. They also made reference to the 147 students, mostly Christian, that were killed at Garissa University in Kenya last year.
The Church in Need has done a lot of very good humanitarian work in different parts of the world. And in fact, the Church in Need was very, very active in Iraq, working with the displaced people who were there. The other interesting fact is, which didn't get a lot of report, but it got a little bit of a coverage. When President Biden was traveling in the past couple of weeks, he wound up in Rome at the conference that, that Tom mentioned, but he also was in Iraq. But his trip to Baghdad was reported very, very heavily. But he also then traveled to Erbil, which is in Kurdistan, which is that northern part of Iraq where I was probably a week or two before Vice President Biden was there. And that's the session where there are hundreds of thousands of displaced persons who are in Iraq. So anyway, so I think why don't we take a break and we'll talk when we come back with Leslie Uggams, who is a Tony and Emmy Award winning actress. And we're kind of delighted that she is going to be with us today as we're in our kind of Mother's Day week. And so just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just. It will be more compassion. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Join us when we come back on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world, and it's basically about just loving God, just loving your neighbor, just loving yourself. And if we do that, then our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. This is Mother's Day week, and kind of we're delighted always in May to celebrate the incredible value of moms, the love that they show to their children, and in return, this is an opportunity to recognize moms. So we've been talking about moms, and I'm delighted that we're going to be speaking in a moment or two with Leslie Uggams, who is an actress, a singer, a grandmom, and a mom, and we're going to talk about her career and some of the things that she has kind of graced us with in enabling us to have better insights into so many important issues while enjoying them and being entertained by them. So Tom, I have to ask you, are you ready for Mother's Day?
I am ready for Mother's Day, Monsignor. I have my gift ready to give to my mom on Sunday, and I have my card, which is very important because, you know, so often when you try to buy a card at this time of year, they're all gone. So you got to get out there early.
Well, you know, my mom, who passed away many years ago, she had this rule, boy. She had this rule that you had to send her the card.
Oh.
You couldn't bring the card.
Wow. Okay.
Because her point was you had to have thought about it long enough in advance that you bought it and you sent it to her, as opposed to just like on your way to see her on Mother's Day doing it. So I got into lots of trouble because, you know, number of years I brought the card. So it was, you know, it was not a good thing.
Okay.
So anyway, but well, listen, let's go to our guest. I'm delighted that Leslie Uggams, actress, singer, Tony Award, Emmy Awards, just delighted that she is with us. Leslie Uggams, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Monsignor. It's great to be here.
Oh, I'm delighted. And I know how busy you are that you're going to take a few minutes to share with our listeners some things. I'm just delighted. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, I'm happy to be here. And now that I heard about sending the card, I may now be using that with my children.
Yeah, boy, oh boy.
I like that idea.
Yeah. Leslie, you don't know how much trouble I got in over the years for that. It was really bad. And you know what's interesting about it? How easy is it? I mean, what's it take you, like 10 minutes to put a stamp on it and to do that? But I blew it a number of years. So.
Of course, we live in the digital world now.
Yeah.
Half these kids don't even know what the post office is.
That's exactly right. Mail? What's that?
Yeah, what's that?
So listen, you're a mom and you're a grandmom. Tell us a little bit. Kind of, and you've had a marvelous career and all. Was it fun, challenging, both, of trying to kind of figure out both sides of that?
Very challenging, because I traveled a lot. I mean, back then I was also doing a lot of nightclub engagements and concert engagements, and the kids traveled with us, but then they got to the age where they had to be in school. So it was tough being away from your children, you know, and they weren't happy about it. We weren't happy about it, but that was the circumstances that we had to do when I was, you know, doing this business.
Right. So since you're a mom and a grandmom, you're kind of watching your grandchildren being raised. Have you kind of developed any kind of insights or ideas about, you know, how it's different for the next generation than your generation of being moms?
Well, it seems they have a little more angst, I notice, because there's too much information out there where they can go on the, you know, the computer or their iPad or something, and then you know, as soon as somebody sneezes, and they can look it up. There's too many people out there trying to be doctors themselves.
Well, you know, Leslie, earlier in the show I had on as a guest, I had Jenny McCarthy on the show.
Yes.
And I asked her the question. I said, Jenny, so how do you figure out this mom stuff? And she said, Yeah, you go with your instincts and you try to kind of do it that way.
That's how I did it.
Yeah.
I went with my instinct and everything, and most of the time I knew what I was doing. And I must say that I have one grandchild, and my daughter is a fabulous mother. And she and her husband are doing a great job in raising our granddaughter Cassidy.
We know where she learned it from.
I hope so. But she is just a terrific child. And I notice, there's so many things now that there's more information that this generation has when it comes to shots that you give your kids and stuff like that. And they have, they've delved into it so much more. I mean, when our kids were little and they needed the shots and everything, we were hesitant about it, I must admit.
Yeah.
But then, when the doctor says, well, if anything happens, so you got the guilt trip.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'll tell you a little bit. I'll share with you and with our listeners a little story. I know very well family, and there were two twins, and they grew up, and now they have their own families. And interestingly, the two brothers, were twins, and they both had, they and their wives had their babies within a week of each other.
Intriguing. Wow.
But it's interesting. One of the twins and his husband is a doctor. So those two are doctors.
Uh-huh.
The other family, she's like an office manager. He's an accountant, et cetera, et cetera. It's so funny watching them because the doctors kind of throw the baby around. They figure the baby will. The accountant and the other people, they're so scared they're going to break the baby.
That is so funny. But it's so true. A lot of times, I mean, listen, when I was growing up, riding my bike, I didn't even, who wore a helmet? You didn't know anything about helmet. You fell down, you got up.
Right. Well, with me, it wasn't a problem. I had such a hard head, it wasn't going to make any difference.
Now you think the kids got the thing for the knees, they got the helmet. By the time you get them dressed, they're exhausted before they get on the bike.
It's winter by that time.
That's right.
Where'd you grow up? Which part of the world?
New York City, Manhattan, Washington Heights area.
You know, that was the first church that I was assigned to in the 1970s, St. Elizabeth's on Wadsworth Avenue.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, that's my old stomping ground. I grew up 164th Street between Anselm and Edgecombe, and there was the Catholic Church there on 165th Street.
St. Rose of Lima?
Yes.
And
yes.
Right down the block from Babies Hospital, Columbia Presbyterian.
That's right. And there was Mother Cabrini Hospital.
That's right. That's right.
When
and
I was growing up too.
And the other issue, that's right behind where Malcolm X was assassinated.
Yes, the Audubon Ballroom.
Yep. And so it's that neighborhood's a great, great neighborhood. I was there from 1976 to 1983, and it was a great experience working with the community there.
Yes.
By that point, at least the northern part, where I was, a little bit further up from where you were.
Right.
Heavily people from the Dominican Republic. And yeah. It was a wonderful immigrant neighborhood. It was still a lot of Jewish people were there.
Right.
The Irish were up in Inwood, and it was, it was a kind of a nice feel for it. I'm not going to paint a rose-colored glasses.
No, there were always issues.
A lot of drugs at that
yes,
point.
Unfortunately. And High Bridge pool there.
Yeah.
We used to go in the summertime.
I don't know. Do you still live in Manhattan, or you?
Yes, I still live in Manhattan.
They reopened that High Bridge to the Bronx.
Yes, I read about that, which is really great.
I'm
so happy to read about.
I didn't
about
do it
that.
Last year. I want to walk over there again this year. I haven't walked over it, but I think it's good. So okay, it's Mother's Day and everything, but tell us a little bit about which part of your incredibly wonderful career, which of the parts you like, kind of you really kind of like and you really think about a lot as things that really excited you when you did them and still excite you?
Well, I mean, I've been very fortunate. Most of what I've done, I've enjoyed doing. But I have to say that starting at the Apollo as a young kid brings me great memories. And plus, I'm on the board now. But, you know, that's where it all began for me in learning my craft because I was working with, you know, Louis Armstrong, Ella Fitzgerald, down in Washington, people like that, and watching them. So I learned a lot, you know, from doing that. So that's a highlight. Of course, my first Broadway show, Hallelujah Baby, and I won a Tony for that, you know.
Yay!
Yeah, you know, so that was exciting. But, of course, what is always in my heart when people come up to me is Kizzy and Roots. Because that was such an extraordinary, not only experience, but extraordinary reaction from the public in watching Roots, that, you know, still today, people come up to me and go, "Oh my gosh, you know, we have our kids watching it, and so it means a lot to me."
You know, interesting. We're speaking with Leslie Uggams. I'm sorry, we have such a good time talking. I forgot to reintroduce her, Leslie Uggams, who's an actress, a singer, grew up in New York, very very key role in Kizzy Reynolds in Roots, Hallelujah Baby, and I could go on and on. But you know, it's interesting, Leslie. Just recently, you know, when I was talking to somebody thinking about Hamilton,
yes,
I thought about Roots.
Yes, yes.
I mean, because in a way, Roots was such a phenomenon that crossed so many barriers and had such an impact, you know, in a way that it seems to me that Hamilton is on the verge of doing that now.
Exactly, because Roots was about history that people were not aware of, and they saw and learned a lot from watching that show. And the same thing with Hamilton, which is so wonderful because it's teaching history in a way that connects to young people and the world that they live in, which is a lot of hip-hop.
Yep.
And he's able to not only do the hip-hop, but he's teaching them about Hamilton, and it's made kids so enthusiastic about seeing it that then when they go to their class, they talk about it like they did with Roots, with the teachers, and they wind up writing papers and things about it. So it's extraordinary what Lynn has done.
Yeah, and I also think the other piece of it is that, listen, the reality of the United States is that there are so many things that are part of our history that are so deeply ingrained and positive, negative, but they're part of our history. And race is part of our American story in both
Absolutely.
Roots and in a different way, but in a very real way. Hamilton deals with both race and immigration. And I think It, to some extent, you know, it almost gives us, and I may want to take this word back, but a safe way to kind of deal with and reflect on those issues, which we really do need to deal with as a people and as a society.
Well, you know, music is, I always find music healing. You don't have to speak the language, but if you hear a beautiful song, whether you know what that language is and what it's saying, it does something to people. I remember years ago I was playing in Vegas, and what we didn't know till after the show was that we had a whole group of people who came from Yugoslavia that were doing a convention and everything, and they reacted to me beautifully. So I had no idea that they were, you know, from another country. And, of course, when the comic went on, they didn't laugh because he thought he was bombing. And then later on they told him, they said, "Oh, well, they don't speak English." He said, "What?"
Well, I'm glad he didn't say that Eastern Europeans don't have a sense of humor.
But, you know, the music has that way of doing that, and then it makes you think, because it touches something in you. And so Lynn has found a way to make people think, as you say, in a safe way, but also remind us that this country was made up of immigrants.
Huh.
So what are we saying now?
Well, Leslie, let me tell you a little bit of my theory on what we're saying now.
Yeah.
I don't think we're saying much different. It's just that, pardon me, some of the loudmouths who are saying things that are not part of our history, for whatever reason, they figured out a way to say them that sells papers and sells advertising, and that's why they're getting much more airtime than what I think is the majority that understands we are an immigrant people. But it's sad how much volatility and the rhetoric that's getting so much play. It's just sad to me.
I know, you know, sometimes I wonder, you know, we need to tell the good stories, not only just the bad stories. And we don't seem to have a balance when it comes to the good stories as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, what do they say? Kind of blood and something sells papers. And I think, you know, that's unfortunately the reality that it's here. But that's why I think, quite frankly, the work that you do in something like Roots and all that other stuff, that does manage to kind of penetrate the popular culture, and that is a good story. It may not, you know, be an article in the newspaper, but that's so important in kind of getting out the right part of what we need to be involved with.
Absolutely, absolutely, because you get a chance to touch people in a way that you don't realize until, you know, you may meet them, they come up to you and say, oh, you know, that song that you sang meant so much to me because, and then they'll give you the story of what it meant to them. Yeah. And certainly Kizzy in Roots certainly touched a lot of people and still touches a lot of people.
So you're still working on Empire?
Yes.
Tell us about that one.
That was such a joy to work on. First of all, I was a big fan from the beginning. So the fact that I'm on it, it was amazing to me. And it's shot in Chicago.
Right.
So we shot it during the winter season. And all those people in the show are so talented and was so embracing when I got there. And it was a joy. And it's I play an interesting character because the character is bipolar.
Okay.
And, you know, so many years ago, there was not a word for it. People didn't really understand what was going on. And they just thought somebody was out and out weird or crazy or something like that. And so since the character that I'm playing is bipolar, she's portrayed like she's not wasn't a nice woman. But now you see that because of the grandson, the oldest grandson, who also is bipolar, now you get to understand what she was all about.
You know, it's interesting. That show, it's on at a time when I usually have a conflict. But when I don't, I watch it. And I find it to be very engaging. It's because it's a world that I don't know a lot about.
Yeah.
So it's something that I say, ooh, I'm learning something new. And to me, you know, maybe if there's a little exaggeration, it doesn't bother me. That's okay. I'm watching it.
Yeah, well, the thing, you know, it also is entertainment. We know that the stories are wonderful, but they have to add some drama to it as well. But
right.
What I love is that the lot of the popular music today is hip-hop. So it's opened up that kind of world into, you know, people that didn't quite understand what is hip-hop all about. You get to see that world, and they also deal with the issues that happen to be current that we go through.
Yeah, and again, when we talk about kind of universal stuff, I mean, still, it seems to me, whatever you want to talk about, the gross domestic product of companies, military alliances, there still is kind of a pervasiveness in how much American kind of culture and song and music and stuff does travel across the entire world.
Oh, absolutely! First of all, Empire is seen all over Europe, and it's a big hit, you know. And so I was sitting on the set one day, and one of the actors and actresses were talking about, you know, like, wow, we're in other countries and they love our show. So, you know, you meet somebody and they say, oh, you know, I live in England and I watch the show. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it really, really is. But
and, you know, when you travel all over the world, everybody wants to be American. They love our music. They love our shows. They love everything, and I mean, America should be very proud of how people love us. Of course,
well,
we have some problems.
Yeah,
Leslie,
I think that's absolutely true, and I think, you know, in light of our little conversation about what I consider to be some very, very awful rhetoric and some awful kind of policy proposals that kind of are emerging in the current presidential situation. In the midst of that, I do worry tremendously that people just don't get it, in the sense that the fact that people want to come here as immigrants should say something.
Yes, I agree.
I mean,
say something. We must be a hell of a country.
You're right. Exactly. And, you know, I mean, and that says something. You know, I'll tell you a little kind of funny. It's not a funny story, but I just went on a pretty kind of serious mission to Iraq to visit some of those internally displaced people who were thrown out by ISIS and stuff like that. And in one of the camps, I'm visiting one of the camps, and one of the kids, there's a little girl, probably a 8-year-old girl or 9-year-old girl with her friend, and I'm looking at her walk down the street, and then in the camp, I say, wait a minute, can I take your picture? And the kids were so very, very friendly. She's got on a T-shirt which says, I love Justin Bieber.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, how she wore that, maybe it, you know, maybe she didn't know, but I bet you she knew who Justin Bieber was.
Oh, I bet she does. I bet she does. I mean, it's surprising how far we reach.
Yeah, it really is. Hey, Leslie Uggams, thank you so much. I really appreciate your taking the time, and I'm delighted that, you know Washington Heights, and I think that's great. And, you know, as a grandmom and a mom, you know, happy Mother's Day to you, and make your kids send you the card as opposed to bring it.
That's my new thing now. Okay. When I see them on Sunday, I would say, okay, from now on, you got to send me the card.
Okay. Hey, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Leslie Uggams, actress, singer, Tony Award, Emmy Award winner, all those basic awards in Roots, now in Empire. Hallelujah, baby. We're delighted that she is, that she kind of joined us on Just Love. You know, we talked about moms, and it's Mother's Day is coming up, and I want to just pay tribute to wonderful moms, and, you know, especially those moms who are struggling, single parent moms that are really trying to do their part, and for whatever reason, they don't have a partner who is raising them, who's helping them to raise their kids. They deserve a tremendous amount of just support and love and just wonderful prayers and good wishes. And, you know, part of what we try to talk about in our public policies is, how do we create policies that support families? How do we do things that make it better for families to be loving, to show loving to each other? And there are various ways to do it. We do it in tax codes. We do it in terms of benefits that people can get. We do it in ways of making a workplace that is friendly with families. And, you know, unfortunately, I mean, we got to put things in laws and rules. But I also think you can create a work environment in which you can be somewhat flexible in terms of making it easier for moms to kind of fulfill their role as being moms. So let's think about how we all can do our part to make our world better for moms, because we make our world better for moms, we make it better for everybody. Thanks for being with us on Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church and the world, the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
listening to The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.